This is KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Welcome to Civil Rights and Wrongs, the state of your civil liberties in the Lone Star State. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of the co-op board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The following program is home-crafted and was recorded on June 25th. In the cover article of the June 12th edition of the Austin Chronicle, Michael King summarized the evolving battles across the country to institute vote-by-mail, or absentee ballots, for all voters during the remaining elections taking place this year during the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. The article cites recent polls that reflect majority support for allowing vote-by-mail, especially by a voter's choice, and notes that only 7 states currently enable universal voting by mail. However, King points out, at least 36 states already allow, quote, no excuse, unquote, requests to vote by mail, within varying degrees of regulations. And given the posed risk to voters' health during the pandemic, even more states have moved to either temporarily loosen restrictions on mail balloting or are planning ways of expanding vote by mail access. King reminds us that's not the case here in Texas, where Democrats and Republicans in the state government remain at odds on the issue, forcing lawsuits between the parties that have remanded the outcome to the court system, from the local level all the way to the federal Supreme Court. As these legal fights proceed at an unhurried pace, election officials in our state's 254 counties have been left without guidance on how best to proceed, given all the conflicting directions, as deadlines loom for the July 14th runoffs and other interim elections. Not to mention these partisan fights have left voters themselves anxious, frustrated, and angry with the cavalier attitude some politicians have adopted about protecting another one of our constitutional rights as citizens. Good evening and welcome to Civil Rights and Wrongs on Co-op 91.7 FM in Austin and streaming live at koop.org. I'm Michelle Manning Scott, guest hosting the program tonight alongside regular host Bob Daly. Our guests this evening are Cindy Weatherby, voting and election law issue chair for the League of Women Voters, Texas, and Anthony Gutierrez, executive director of Common Cause Texas. Also joining us is our regular guest, Jim Harrington, founder of the Texas Civil Rights Project and head of Proyecto Santiago at St. James Episcopal Church. Welcome back to the program, Cindy and Anthony. I'm so glad you could both join us again tonight. When this program airs on the 30th of June, because we are recording it the previous Thursday, the 25th, at that point, early voting for the July 14th runoff elections will be in full swing. And of course, the spread of COVID-19 cases will most likely still be on the rise. Thus, the safety and well-being of the voters in the state who will be going to the polls will be a topic of concern for many. To avoid this danger, the option to vote by mail seems like a no-brainer for mitigating this threat. So why hasn't the state government changed the law or even just temporarily loosened the restrictions to vote by mail like so many other states have done? Do either of you have a launching pad to start off that conversation on?
Didn't President Trump signal the reason for this? That didn't want too many Democrats voting?
I would say so. I know the Texas Supreme Court did throw out a ruling. And I'm curious to know if there is, I guess the lawyers in the room here, if there's enough slack in that ruling to allow most voters to actually go ahead and apply to vote by mail at this point. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in here. I think Cindy had some more information on this, but I'm sure you can fill in if I miss anything. So there's an awful lot to unpack with the vote by mail question in Texas. The question of why the people in power don't want it, you know, I think Jim nailed it on the head is, There is a perception, and I think there have been a number of studies that prove this to not be based on any kind of reality, but there's a perception that it could favor one party or the other. Absolutely not true. But also, you know, this is Texas. One lesson I've learned working many legislative sessions where we try to pass reforms that would make it easier for everyone to vote, or just like more efficient for everyone to register with things like online registration. The lesson we've taken away is like, if it looks like it might make it easier for anyone to vote, the people in power in Texas just don't like it. They're fiercely protective of the status quo, and changing vote by mail, I think it seems like a no-brainer to all of us, but it, for whatever reason, is just really scary to them for political reasons. As far as the state of the law today, we have to be really careful how we talk about this, because we, just like we have a governor who is pretty openly hostile to voting, we have an attorney general who is just dying to prosecute people, both for mistaking what the law is and then trying to prosecute them and call it voter fraud. The new twist in the last like month or so is he's also been really vocal about threatening to prosecute any advocacy organizations that encourage people to vote by mail who, in his opinion, shouldn't be. As far as like what the state of the law is right now is basically like it is as was before the litigation started. And we'll see what happens at the Supreme Court. But basically, this all hinges on the question of who is and is not disabled. The disability clause in the Texas Election Code, it is not exactly defined. Basically, what the last court that ruled on this said was, if you believe you are disabled under the letter of the law, then you are, and you should request a vote by mail. You should send in a vote by mail application. The argument that the state put forward in court was, if you lack immunity to this deadly pandemic that is killing, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, we don't think that qualifies as a disability. And I think everyone else in the rest of the world disagrees, but that was sort of what the litigation was hinging on.
Right. And Michelle, I can read you actual wording from the Secretary of State's election advisory, and that's what we offer. You mentioned litigation. The League of Women Voters did participate in some of that, and we also tried our best at advocacy to get the governor to change his executive proclamation, but that didn't work. So I guess we're going to look at it from the Serenity Clause, you know, do what you can to change and accept what you can't and move forward. And the League tries to provide accurate information and tools to let anyone who wants to vote, vote. Any citizen who is able to do that. I mean, it's not like we're dropping anything into that. So the actual language is, one of the grounds for voting by mail is disability. The election code defines disability to include, quote, a sickness or physical condition that prevents the voter from appearing at the polling place on election day without a likelihood of needing personal assistance or of injuring the voter's health. And voters who meet this definition and wish to vote by mail must submit an application for ballot by mail. As I believe Anthony mentioned, there is no investigatory agency involved or any certification of disability. There never has been. That's not something counties have ever done. It's up to you to just check a box that says whatever you feel like you are entitled to. And, you know, there are other reasons that you can vote by mail. It's not just disability-based.
Right.
If you're 65 or older, if you're in jail but not found guilty of a felony, if you're in jail or otherwise able to vote, basically, or if you're out of the county during the early voting or election day. And people don't investigate that either. Requesting a ballot by mail, because you can request it yourself, and you can make that decision yourself. But as Anthony said, we have heard that there are counties in the state who have been challenging and will probably continue to challenge people. So it's not something we want to tell you to do. It's something we want to provide you this information and you make up your own decision. We do give suggestions on how to complete the application for the ballot by mail. And, you know, I will admit, having seeing the news from the last couple of days and seeing these forecasts of foreign governments dropping millions of ballots on the country just is an indication of a lack of knowledge of the election process, because our mail ballots come, they go to people who are already registered to vote, especially in the state of Texas, where you have to register to vote 30 days in advance of the election. And there's a signature on that registration to vote. There's a signature on your request to vote, which has to be in writing, or you can call and request that. And then the signature on the ballot. The ballot is voted, put into a secret envelope, put into another envelope, and you sign the flap of that final envelope that goes back with your signature. So it's a very safe process, and then it's also available later for auditing purposes. And in Texas, all ballots are numbered. So there's no way that there's going to be a major influx of foreign, international, or any inside the country dumping ballots that will be voted and change the election.
Right. I guess that also brings up a couple of questions. One, where is the news coming that there's going to be a dump of ballots?
Where is the news coming from?
Yeah, what's the backstory on that? I mean, obviously, it's been kind of circulating as a rumor. I realize the media has been bringing that up as a possibility. I'm just wondering. You seem to sound like it was a little bit more legit at this point.
Well, this is gonna I'm saying it's not legit. I'm saying it was coverage of our president and our attorney general yesterday, who made that statement.
Okay, and then I know from speaking to Anthony. That the issue of vote by mail is also become so contentious around the onset of COVID-19. People are starting to wake up and say, hey, how can we get this law changed permanently, so to speak, so that it becomes in any election going forward, basically, anybody who wants to vote by mail can. So are either the League of Women Voters or Common Cause Texas working on any kind of initiatives to get the law changed?
Yeah, for sure. So I know the league also has things they're working on on this front. So there's a few different ways that this could happen. I think the first one people look at is litigation, and the Supreme Court is going to do something on this at some point. But that is definitely not the only path. I think the second one, and the one that we're working on most actively right now, people need to remember that, like, we should not be letting Governor Abbott and our Secretary of State off the hook on this one. Like, if he decided tomorrow that he wants to let everybody vote by mail under the disability clause, I do believe that's a thing that is within his legal authority. The same amount of legal authority he used to postpone the July runoff elections, that's not an explicit thing anywhere in the election code that says he can do that. Like, that the voter purge that the Secretary of State undertook last year, that was a huge thing that blew up the last legislative session. The way they did that was not outlined anywhere. Like, he wasn't instructed by the election code to do that. They just like interpreted what was there and then like created this whole procedure. They could use that same level of just kind of legal interpretation to just say, okay, everybody qualifies under the disability clause. So there's a political route. And I think that's important to talk about, because I think especially now that we're getting closer to an election, we are going to see some problems in this July election. And, you know, those problems are definitely going to coincide with the fact that we're also seeing these massive rises in COVID infections in places, in all the big metro areas in the state. So is the governor going to give in at some point? Like, it's anybody's guess, but I think that pressure, as it increases, like, the odds of him giving up certainly do, or the odds of him doing the smart thing, I would say, definitely improve. But then, you know, the long-term gains here, like, obviously, when the legislature is back in session in 2021, they obviously can do something about this. And just today, they were posting pictures of the House floor in the Texas legislature where they're putting plexiglass like between every single desk, because they're taking smart steps that they should be taking to make sure that they are protected. Taking the step like letting everyone vote by mail is an obvious smart step that they should be doing to let every Texan protect themselves as well. And then finally, Congress is the last one. You know, depending on how the elections go, the very first bill that was introduced by the current House majority was the Democracy for All HR 1 bill. It had a huge number of democracy reforms. And if the House and Senate are controlled by Democrats after this next election, I think you will see a similar package introduced, and that this one will probably include a massive expansion of vote by mail, in my opinion.
And Cindy, did you want to talk about that?
I'll just add that there are already 34 states and the District of Columbia that allow voting at home without a reason. And, you know, that's the the small step that could be taken. We just allow anyone to request one without a reason. And then, you know, the range of the improvements could be moving toward some of those states that do all voting by mail. And that's sort of misleading too, because all of the states do offer in-person voting as well. There are always going to be those people that are in those states, even where all citizens who are registered to vote receive a ballot, that, you know, maybe they have mail delivery problems, or there's data errors, or some places don't even receive mail. Some of the Native American reservations don't have proper mail service. All of those states that mail ballots to every registered voter do also offer in-person voting as well.
So in the state of Washington, for example, that where mm-hmm. they have all mail voting, then mm-hmm. you're saying if someone decided to take their ballot and hand carry it into a polling place, that would be their option, I guess.
Absolutely. Not only can they do that close to where they live, but they also have receptacles throughout the area, sort of like a post office mailbox where you put your ballots in. So you can choose to take your ballot if you don't trust the mail to get it to them and put it in their box, or you can go into an office and give them your ballot.
Got it.
Nationally, this seems to be a movement. The league is evaluating that, whether Texas will support that, you know, as anybody's guess. I could place odds, but I'm not going to do that today. But there is a National Vote at Home organization that was started by the Secretary of State for the state of Colorado and offers an extremely great insights into how this was implemented. Generally, it gets started in a state by offering optional county use, and they get a few people behind that and understand it and understand how it can work and how well it facilitates voting. The one thing that you can say about all of those states is their voter turnout increased significantly. And I think that's one of the major reasons, as Anthony alluded to, that's prohibited any consideration of that in Texas and some other states like us.
Are the vote by mail initiatives, or the way that they've all come to fruition in all the other states, have they all been government led, or have there ever been any instances of voters themselves, as we might get to later in the program, talking about the Slay the Dragon documentary and the uprising to end the gerrymandering in the state? A group of people got together and changed that.
Well, the only problem with that in the state of Texas is that we don't have initiative and referendum statewide.
And I think that needs to be explained, because Anthony was explaining it to me about people wanting to know what they could do to get this changed. Then really the course of action for voters here in the state of Texas, at least, is pretty much you've just got to get involved and talk to your representatives and talk it up and keep pressure on them to make the change.
Right. People listen to their own constituents, and you need to know who is representing you and be involved in the process and, one, vote, but also keep up with what's going on by explaining that that's what your interest is. And the more people they hear from, the more interest they may have.
The only thing I would add there is, and I won't get too far into the weeds on like the advocacy work we're doing, how we sort of push for legislation. People are curious, they can learn more about the voting reforms that we're pushing for and like how they can get involved with those things at lettexasvote.org. But one thing you said, Michelle, I just wanted to key in on is like that while we don't have a citizen petition process in Texas, I mean, at least not at the state level, I wouldn't phrase it as saying like these reforms all are like government led. I think in a lot of places you see that whenever something passes that's a voting reform, like vote by mail or automatic voter registration, what you see is like there is, you know, certainly legislators are the ones that have to like write the bills and put them forward, but like there is a massive group of people that are making noise and like dragging them to do it. It's kind of rare that it's like a legislator, especially, I don't know, I guess maybe what you just alluded to, like with the independent redistricting commissions, that's a good example where most of those are citizen petitions, but in places like, I think it was Virginia recently that adopted one, like legislators kind of let it, but then like once they were like right at the finish line, a bunch of them were just like, maybe we don't want this after all. And it was only like this massive uprising of people who were just like flooding their offices mm-hmm. and you know, tweeting at them and sending emails and making calls, they were just like, oh, well, yeah, we actually better do this. Like, we can't back off this now. So it's usually, I mean, government-led in the sense that they vote on it, but very much like people have to be the ones making the noise to make these things happen.
Got it.
But engaging in the process is really important. And you know, I know Anthony's Common Cause offers some suggestions on positions that candidates may have. The League of Women Voters we are 100% nonpartisan. We never support any candidate or have any recommended list of candidates. But we do offer information and answers to questions that the candidates pose themselves, and that can be found online easily at vote411.org.
Nevertheless, this does appear to be a rather partisan issue right now, and I don't know what more to say about that, except that you know, the reality is that the president and our state administrators have come out pretty squarely against this. And it, you know, and I think Jim was getting at this. It seems to me that, you know, one could interpret this as tantamount to voter suppression.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also, but, you know, I mean, there's, when they're, you know, people like the governor and the secretary of state, you know, when they're doing the math on this, like it is like, obviously there's a political calculation there.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that really has been talked about on the vote by mail fight in Texas is, if you look back at the last legislative session when that Secretary of State tried to pull some crazy stuff, you know, purging tens of thousands of naturalized citizens from the voter rolls improperly, yeah, you know, all of the voting rights groups and a bunch of like progressive legislators banded together and stopped that nomination. And that guy's not the Secretary of State anymore. The person who is currently in that office now is, you know, we're not referring to her as like the interim, but she is not officially confirmed yet. That process has to happen in the next legislative session. And if she's a block to letting people vote by mail, like, I think there's a really good chance you see a whole lot of people rising up to have that discussion during her confirmation hearing.
Right. And her predecessor had not been, I think he was in much the same position, right? And it was during the last
time. Yeah,
it was the last legislative session. And when all this came to light, they refused to approve him. And then didn't he wind up as some official in the governor's staff and at a salary that was even higher than he would have gotten as the Secretary of State?
Yep.
Yeah.
However, he's now a paid lobbyist. So.
Yeah. Okay. I just for the record.
Right. It's the state that our electorate has put into office, and now they have to judge, you know, how they feel about that.
Yeah.
And there are more people registered to vote. You know, we obviously have more options for people to put into place the people that they think reflects their values, if they choose to use it.
Yeah.
And understand it.
Right. So aside from the vote by mail debacle that's going on right now, are there other initiatives that are really front and center for either of your organizations that you would like to bring to light or stress here?
Definitely one. I mean, the one of the biggest programs that we do is the Election Protection Program, which is, you know, basically just having poll monitors out at poll sites, making sure there's no problems going on in the field, and having a 866 our vote hotline that people can call if they see problems. I mean, the other really big thing going on is people are going to start voting in Texas on Monday. I mean, we have a July runoff election coming up, and this is another area where, honestly, I feel like the leadership or lack thereof from the state has just been sort of staggering. Like, there have been a bunch of recommendations issued, but not a lot of like requirements as far as what counties can and cannot do. A lot of counties are taking it upon themselves to make sure that, you know, social distancing is adhered to at poll sites and trying to put up, you know, plexiglass and have cleaning procedures. There's also a lot of talk about curbside voting, which is a really sort of obscure thing that very few people, I think, understand what it is. But basically, like, if you qualify under almost the identical disability clause that one uses for vote by mail, you should be able to go to the poll site and say you want to vote curbside, and they'll like come out to you and you just vote there. But all those things I just listed, like, there's before the pandemic, there were all kinds of election administration issues in the primaries where we had, you know, those massive 7-8 hour lines. There were poll sites where the machines were failing, poll sites that were closing at the last minute. We're having to keep an eye on all those things for this July runoff. And then also, like, now we're trying to keep an eye on, is everybody actually adhering to safety guidelines so that people that show up to vote in person aren't endangering their lives any more so than is necessary. So it's a lot to watch. It's going to be, you know, hopefully things go well in July, but there are just, you know, a lot of points of failure where we're watching to make sure things don't go terribly wrong, like we've been seeing in a lot of other states lately.
Right. That's a lot of counties to keep track of as far as what's, I'm sure everybody's going to be doing things differently. And since there's not a lot of guidance to how to go about this, I can imagine it must be a possible recipe for a lot of confusion.
I think there are a number of organizations like the League of Women Voters who have tried to come to their rescue too. I mean, we offered a webinar with the leadership of the elections administrators and the county clerks around the state, with all other sorts of support groups, as well as other counties, to talk about how we can be supportive in their recruitment of election workers, because that's why a lot of the polls opened late on March, in the March election for the primary, because people didn't show up. I heard here in Travis County, Dana DeBevoise say that 80 people didn't show up first thing, so she really had to scramble to get polling places open. She said, typically it's around 8. This time it was 80. So it's really important. And a number of groups have stood up with us and helped recruit. We've reached out to young organizations or who have a younger profile who are technically savvy. And I just got a report today that we sent 240 people through the good work of Open Austin and a number of tech-related organizations in the county. So we've all tried to be helpful. We also did a webinar in coordination with Disability Rights Texas on special accommodations for those individuals with severe handicaps and working through the issues with them on their ballot and understanding what their options were. You know, we all are trying to pull together, and there are growing numbers of groups that represent young voters, that represent voters of color, all sorts of organizations that are popping up and getting organized and offering support. You know, most of our elections in these 254 counties, as you said, there's such a great big variety of their staff, their skills, their resources, particularly resources. And so every county has to be treated a little bit differently. One county may be able to handle curbside voting really easily, and another county may not. You know, it's a county by county thing, and people really need to know what's going on in their own county and how they can best take advantage of the resources available to them through that one county's process.
We're speaking with Cindy Weatherby of the League of Women Voters, Texas, and Anthony Gutierrez of Common Cause Texas. We need to take a short station break, but we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Civil Rights and Wrongs on Co-op 91.7 FM in Austin and streaming live at koop.org. I'm your guest host, Michelle Manning Scott, along with regular host Bob Daly. This evening's program was homecrafted and recorded on June 25th. We're speaking with Cindy Weatherby of the League of Women Voters, Texas, and Anthony Gutierrez of Common Cause, Texas, about the current issues surrounding our elections and voting rights here in Texas.
I assume that the counties themselves have a lot of leeway in kind of what they are able to try and initiate. I mean, we were talking about curbside voting, and obviously the resources available to each county, like you said, are different. I'm just curious to know maybe if you've heard anything about what's happening here in Travis County as ideas or innovations going on that we might want to know about as far as going to the polls on the day of or during early voting that might be different this time around.
I know that they have undertaken extreme measures to make it as safe as possible. In fact, there's a webinar tonight where Dana is going to be talking about that with League of Women Voters of Austin and the National Council of Jewish Women collaborating on that. You know, you hear a lot about people bringing their own pencil, for example, to click on the screen. In Travis County, I know they're issuing, I don't know how old you are, Michelle, or if you remember, where people used to put these little rubber things on their fingers to count papers.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to give finger protectors like that to everyone who votes, who can use them there to touch the screen and then throw them away.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. But they also, you know, have the sanitation and the protection and the face guards and all of that sort of thing. They're doing a really good job of trying to make sure that it's going to be safe for the election workers as well as the voters.
Right.
And what they do and how they do it's going to happen differently in county by county.
There's not been any kind of initiative that any of you have heard of as far as like trying to set up outdoor polls, you know, with tents and things like that. At least that would mitigate some of the...
Well, there's rain and there's electricity and there's all sorts of things. I don't know what all the possibilities are, but as far as I know, they're not. In looking at the... I just printed off the new list of ballot locations in Travis County. And by the way, those are readily available online at votetravis.org. So your listeners can go to that now for the early voting locations as well as the election day locations. And they are using more larger spaces. I know you've heard they're not using grocery stores because it just doesn't fit and it's not a good co-location opportunity.
So that sounds like they're shuffling around. So there's going to be some different locations.
A little bit, yeah. When you print out the list, it indicates which ones are new. So you'll know that.
And there's still the online, you can check the waiting times online so that hopefully you can go when it's not quite as busy.
Right. They have a special person now that I think is monitoring that. That'll make it more accurate. You know, in Travis County, it's a red light, yellow light, green light.
Right.
And that way you can know where to go. And there's more days for a runoff election, as the governor granted us, although no weekend day. So you have the luxury of driving. I've talked with people who are planning to drive around to those locations, and if they see a line, just come back another time. You know, we certainly recommend that you vote as early as you can. We also recommend that if you are interested in vote by mail, that you go ahead and do that. You've got until July the 2nd to get your application for a ballot in. Now, that's not optimum. You should have done it before. I know I'm over 65. I've never even considered it. And I got mine in 2 months ago and my ballot's already been put back in the mail. So early is always better. For those who want to vote by mail in November, you can go ahead and submit that now. I mean, there are many people who are over 65 who have never voted by mail. That's a big group of people. So the more that vote by mail, the fewer they'll be at the ballot box.
I assume that the organizations have been looking to the other states and their elections so far during COVID and to maybe see what might happen. I guess it's hard to see where the trajectory of the COVID cases is going to be as far away as November. But for this one, I mean, we just had that fail in Kentucky. I know we're trying to avoid things like that at all costs, but when we have all these restrictions, it just certainly makes it difficult.
One other thing I'd like to emphasize is that this is not a business as usual kind of election year, and we're not going to get election results the day of the election like we used to get. It doesn't represent any wrongdoing. It just is going to take more time to get those results and for them to be accurate.
Yeah, that's a good thing to point out for sure.
You may not get it for a week, and it still doesn't represent a problem. But we also are, I know from talking with a great number of the elections administrators and the county clerks, we're hoping to learn, and we're also hoping to use this as an opportunity to educate those new election workers so that they'll be better prepared for November. Because as you know, if you voted, most of the election workers have been election workers for many years and have the time, and they really enjoy doing it, but they are in the most vulnerable category. Mm-hmm. So all of these new election workers that we bring in don't have that talent. It's almost a talent, but they don't have the background. And many of the counties say that they usually matched up a new election worker with a very veteran election worker. So in addition to the required training that they get, which we've always wanted to increase before this ever happened, they also had somebody who had been trained and done it multiple times. And so this time, this election will be important to help us prepare for November as well.
Right. And I guess one of the important things is also, is how are we talking to first-time voters this time around, and also the more marginalized groups, especially since some of these people in these populations are going to be more vulnerable to the COVID outbreak. And so how do we get these people to the polls now in this more precarious time? And the information that I've been getting through League of Women Voters when I was volunteering earlier in the year with the First Vote program, that the number of, I believe it's the demographic of 18, is it 18 to 34 or is it 18 to 24?
That 18 to 24, I believe.
18 to 24, that group could have such a huge impact in the outcome of the elections based on their votes because of the number of individuals in that age group. From what you guys have seen so far, are we seeing a big influx of those age group of voters signing up, or do you have access to those numbers to know?
I don't think we have any breakdowns that I'm aware of, but I do know that the number of people contacting us in this area and around the state is exponentially greater. And for example, here in Austin, we had voters out in the Black Lives Matter demonstrations, registering voters. We've got people putting together voter registration and voting packets that are being targeted to areas where they know people aren't registered to vote, and they hang them on their doorknob, packet with a registration card and information that are targeted areas with low voter turnout or non-registrations. So there are a lot of people who are very interested still, a big base of people who are doing their best to get the vote out and to get people registered. Anthony, have you guys been working on, you're not really geared to voter registration, I guess, other than wanting online voter registration like we all do.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. No, we don't do a lot of turnout or actually like on the ground voter registration. We do a lot more advocacy and just making sure that the groups that are doing that, that we're sort of supporting their work. But what I was going to say is this is another area where we, just because of our state leadership, are really kind of hampered in trying to encourage young people to participate. Because if you look back at that CARES Act funding that Congress sent down to the states that was supposed to help with elections, part of it was supposed to help with election administration. What a lot of states used that money for was online voter registration, just like educating people about it or expanding the infrastructure around it. Texas is one of those states where, you know, for no reason at all, really, other than political reasons, we still don't have online voter registration. So if you're 18 to 24 and you probably never mail anything in your life ever, the only way for you to register is either in person or doing something by mail. There's a lot of organizations trying to work on that problem and, you know, doing youth outreach, doing stuff on campus. But, you know, it is a problem where there are some Texas-specific hurdles that young people in other states don't have to deal with, which is really, really pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
I will say, though, the League was successful in getting the Secretary of State's office to actually promote a quasi-substitute online voter registration called Register Number 2 Vote, register2vote.org, where if you go online, you can fill out information and they will send you a completed voter registration card that you can sign and put in an envelope that they provide you to send back. You know, that's not at all perfect, but it's something that doesn't require a young person to find a stamp. It's also got the downside of what if they don't get around to putting it in the mailbox, because not all young people know where a mailbox is, but it's something, it's a step. We're definitely committed as much as Common Cause is, and Common Cause has done some great research showing that the impact of implementation of online voter registration is not a partisan issue. Anthony's office and working with their national office put together a great report that demonstrates that with statistics and real live elections, you know, people can understand that somewhat better. We can talk until we're blue in the face, but it is not a partisan issue. The National Council of State Legislators, it's the least partisan of all election issues. So we're going to keep at it. And as Anthony mentioned earlier, the more we talk about it, the more people that get the message to their representatives, the more chance we'll have to at least talk about it more in the legislature. But it's all going to depend on who's in those leadership positions.
So this is probably going to sound like a radical idea, but there are actually countries that have an opt-out sort of system. Ours is opt-in. You know, if you don't do anything, you're not part of it until you register and actually vote. But there are countries that basically expect every adult to vote. Is there any hope at all of that ever happening in the U.S.?
So it does. It does, actually. So there are many states that what you're talking about is it's slightly different in other countries, but the American version is automatic voter registration, where anytime you go do like any interaction with a governmental agency, like, you know, Medicaid or driver's license or whatever, like you automatically get opted in unless you specifically choose to opt out of voter registration. Mm-hmm. Colorado was at the forefront of that, and a number of states have implemented it now. For us in Texas, from a political perspective, you know, we're still working on online voter registration and some other reforms, like automatic voter registration is pretty pie in the sky, basically almost sci-fi stuff, but it's, you know, it's within the realm of possibility, like people do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have the support in the numbers. We don't have the support that allows it to go forward. And, you know, leadership selects who the committee chairs are and what gets brought up before the body.
Yeah, and kind of around that, leadership and how that gets changed is obviously by who your representatives are and therefore who you are voting for. If we circle back to the gerrymandering issue, and since I did watch the Slay the Dragon documentary and I was part of the virtual discussion that was online back on June 7th, I just was curious to know, what's the path forward on getting that changed here in the state? Because obviously we have a very skewed system that needs some correction. So is there anything on the horizon in that regards for the next legislative session?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And there's actually a bunch happening even before that. So I guess I'll just start with that. So the panel discussion, it was a partnership between the production team that produced that Slay the Dragon documentary, which is available everywhere. It's amazing, just if people want to check it out. And the partnership was between them and the Fair Maps Texas Coalition, which is Common Cause, the League of Women Voters, and a number of other groups, all nonpartisan groups that are working on this. And people can learn more about that at fairmapstexas.org if they're interested. But as far as like what's actually happening, so there's already talk about litigation ahead of the next round of redistricting. But before we even get to that, like there's a bunch happening right now as far as the census and how that relates to redistricting. No one quite knows the answer to this because I think it's going to require a court to probably give us a definitive answer at some point. But the census data that gets transmitted to the states so that the legislatures know, like, here's how many people you have to work with, now you can divide them into districts, that data is going to be delayed this time. And by the time Texas gets it, it's going to be either the very end or maybe even after the legislative session. So they will not have time to do their redistricting during their regular session in 2021. So the options there are, it seems like the most likely scenario is that the maps will be drawn by a special session in, you know, the summer of 2021. And then because of some language in the Constitution that says that they have to draw maps in the first regular session after getting the data, they're probably going to have to redraw them again in the 2023 regular session. So what that means in practical terms for those of us who work on reform is it's sort of good news. I mean, it is a messy process, but it's sort of always a messy process in Texas. But the bright side is we get multiple bites at the apple to try to pass reforms. If we want to try to get an independent commission passed, you know, we thought that fight was over because 2021 was going to be a redistricting session. You can't pass a bill in the same session that, you know, impacts what legislatures do in that session. But now we can. Now, if we can get a bill passed in 2021, it could impact what happens in the special session or we could try to pass something in the special session that impacts what happens in 2023. You know, the ideal thing that we all want to see is an independent commission so that it's, you know, just people and not politicians drawing districts for themselves. That also might be, you know, politically being realistic, like that might be sort of pie in the sky, but there's a range of other things. We're also trying to pass things like just trying to get a supermajority vote on any redistricting plan in the House. What that would mean is no one party could just like roll over the other. You would have to get like some amount of legislators from the other side to come with you to get any plan, which, you know, in that case, it doesn't guarantee that a map doesn't have some amount of gerrymandering, but you certainly aren't going to be able to draw a heavily gerrymandered map, the types of which we've seen over the past at least 2-3 decades in Texas. And I guess the last thing I'll mention is one of the most important pieces of redistricting of the process is what's supposed to be happening right now and is not, is the redistricting committees in the House and Senate are supposed to be going all around the state and just hearing from people about their communities and like what is called a communities of interest is, like places that people feel need to be kept together, however the lines are drawn. You know, for obvious reasons, those are not happening right now, but they're talking about how they're going to resume those. And there's a lot of push from us just to make sure that these can be done in a safe way. And really, they need to figure out a way to allow people to testify virtually so that you're not expecting people to go show up in a gymnasium with 100 other people and endanger themselves just to be able to talk about their community and have some input on this next round of redistricting.
Is there something in place as far as this has to be done within a certain amount of time, the talks around the different districts?
So there's not a statutory limitation on that. The field hearings are something that they do all the time because they've done them and now they are required because it's always a piece of litigation. Like, what did people in this part of San Antonio say, like when you went to go do this hearing there? But for functional purposes, like they need to do them, you know, probably before January when all the legislators are supposed to be required to be back in Austin full time.
So if they redraw them next summer, you're saying, but then they're going to have to go back to the drawing board most likely because they're not going to have the 2020 census data in order to be able to do it correctly. They're going to have to go back to the drawing board and we're going to have another shot at it in 2023, it sounds like. Do they go back to the counties again? Is that another shot at that too?
Maybe. I know we have actual attorneys listening on the panel. I am not one. This is like relaying legal interpretations about the 2021 special session, then drawing again in 2023. They will have the new data for the 2021 special session, but as far as like, should they hold field hearings again for 2023? Like, I would say yes. That, you know, it really comes down to a question of also who's in charge at that point? Who is the state leadership? Who are the people in charge of those committees?
Right. But again, that just draws how important this upcoming election in November is for helping that cause as well, getting the leadership in place that we think are going to help make the changes there. Yeah. Bob, Jim, did you guys have anything else that you wanted to say or ask?
No, keep up the good work, Cindy and Anthony. Very important.
Appreciate that.
We certainly work with the organization that you founded on a regular basis. We've, as I mentioned earlier, intervened in lawsuits. We've been party to lawsuits. We've been represented by TCRP in each of those situations. And we appreciate the whole organization and working with all the other organizations around the state. We have a great group of people that try to work together and amplify what each other are doing and take advantage of everything that we can to be successful at whatever we are trying to do. And we are doing things certainly with a broader base than we have in the past. Last year, 2019, was the Texas League of Women Voters 100th anniversary. And throughout that year, we tried to call a great deal of attention to all of the other women who didn't receive the right to vote when we did. So we've called attention to all of the leaders from the Latinx, Mexican-American ancestry of voting in the state, all the work that all the people of any minority group in the state have done over those years. And our membership has broadened a great deal. There are increased numbers of board members of our League of Women Voters, local chapters, local leagues all over the state. And the number of our leagues has increased dramatically as well during this last year. So this year is the National League of Women Voters 100th anniversary in 2020. And we are actually in our virtual convention this week. So I can say that having participated in a large number of Zooms this week already, I could say that that's a national phenomenon as well. So I feel really good about that. We've made great strides, and we're committed to continuing to do that because we are all in this together, and every citizen who has the right to vote should be allowed to exercise that right.
I've been hearing about that, and that the numbers are increasing, so that's always a good sign. I wanted to give you all another chance, giving the web addresses for information about voting, since this is really important. When this runs on Tuesday, it'll be in the middle of early voting. I know the vote411.org is all important and a great source for people to go to if they need more information. We've thrown out a couple of others, but I want to make sure people, if they want more information, have the chance to get it.
That is the top of our mind as something we can offer to the community, which is accurate, up-to-date, concise information to answer people's questions about voting. And that's available at lwvtexas.org. And if you look at the voting and elections page, there's information in English and Spanish. The voter's guide is in English and Spanish, but also how to vote safely, how to vote in person or by mail, special information on for new voters or voters with disabilities, or if you have a question about voting, you're going to find it there, and you're going to find links to any other resources you may need. Your county website, for instance, for your county elections department. So that is where we think our greatest impact is providing that great information and then sharing it with all the other wonderful collaborators we have around the state.
Then Common Cause.
Yeah, the two I would throw out, first, lettexasvote.org, and it's Texas just all spelled out. That is the sort of central place where people can just go to learn about the advocacy work we're doing to push for things like vote by mail and also, you know, online voter registration and a number of other voting reforms that are in place around the country, but Texas does not yet have. You can also find a lot of stories about people who ran into like voter registration problems, or there's some really compelling stories about people who were shocked at the lack of civics education in Texas. Just really tried hard to find stories of people for whom these issues are a problem. Because sometimes when you talk about voter suppression in this day and age, it's hard for people to imagine, well, who is this really an issue for? Isn't voting just really simple for everyone? And it's not. But sometimes it helps to have like a human face to understand like why some of these things we're talking about are issues. And the other important one is, of course, the 866 Our Vote Hotline, where there are voting rights experts and lawyers and people, including lots of our friends from the League, who are helping to make sure that if anyone has voting questions or if they run into problems at the polls, there is assistance awaiting them on the hotline.
I want to put in a quick plug to Anthony's Common Cause Vote Texas face mask. I just got mine yesterday in the mail.
Great.
The Let Texas Vote by Mail mask is very popular.
Right.
Let Texas Vote by Mail. That's what it says.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
For all the people who like would prefer to be voting by mail but feel like they have to go, we wanted to make sure they had a face mask that was, you know, safe, three-ply, antibacterial, all that jazz. And hopefully we just get a lot of people taking selfies at the polls with their Let Texas Vote by Mail mask.
Right.
Very clever. Well, I just want to thank you both again for joining us to discuss all these important issues. And I think hopefully we can get you back on the program later in the year before the November elections, so we can talk about all the latest developments regarding the elections here in Texas and, of course, maybe even the whole country at that point. And this is such a landmark election year. These discussions, I think, are very important. There's going to be a lot going on.
Thanks for all you're doing on this, Michelle and Bob.
Well, thank you. I want to echo Jim's sentiments, you know, keep up the good work. I'm sure at times in Texas, this must seem like a real Sisyphean task, you know?
That's a fantastic way to put that, yeah.
The more we communicate, the more we collaborate, the better off we are.
There you go.
That's what it's all about. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you, everybody.
That's all for this evening. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay tuned for theme music coming up next. A quick note from the Community Council at Co-op. We want to know how you're faring through the COVID-19 crisis. If you have questions about community resources, or if you'd just like to share a story about people doing good work, you can leave us a message by emailing covid19@koop.org, or you can call or text 512-710-5353. A member of our community council will get back to you. That's COVID-19@coop.org or 512-710-5353 for Co-op's COVID-19 Community Response Line. Have a good evening, everyone, and stay safe.